an alumni of the University of Arizona, Mr. Perry Charlie, is director of the Uranium Education Program and the Research and Outreach Director of Diné Environmental Institute of Diné College in Shiprock, New Mexico. He is also Diné. He has been an educator involved in the environmental, public health, and psychosocial impacts from past nuclear industries on Navajo lands, including reclamation remedial activities and legislation, for nearly 40 years. He has served often as an advisor in the application of Native American traditional cultural practices to Western curriculum and research protocol, and has developed scientific and medical terminologies into Navajo glossaries.
My name is Perry Charlie, and I've been involved in environmental issues most of my professional career. I spent well over 30 years working for various government agencies dealing specifically with environmental radiation and addressing the legacy that was left behind during the 1940s to 1970s, Manhattan Engineering District, and later on the Atomic Energy Commission, nuclear development in the southwest part of the United States, which included the Navajo Indian Reservation. From there, I transferred into the academic environment, and I have been with Diné College here in Shiprock, New Mexico, for close to 20 years as the co-founder and the director of the Diné Environmental Institute Research and Outreach. I'm also now the senior scientist with the same institute. Our purpose is to look at the mass array of environmental problems that are facing the Navajo Nation that would contribute to impacts in the land and our plants, our animals, our water system, the air, the soil, and various types of media. And there are many elements of concerns that it would eventually, through various pathways of exposure, affect the Navajo public. So that has been my role. The other major component of this is, as a representative and employee of the Diné College, it's incumbent upon me to train Native American students, the Diné College students, in research methodologies and doing a lot of things as fledgling scientists so that they could enhance their careers and their academic environment. So that's what I've been doing, and I think that's where my passion is working with our students here, our Diné College students, in all areas of the STEM discipline, STEM meaning the science, technology, engineering, and math discipline. So
that's incredible work. I think that leadership has a lot to do with succession. What you're doing is very powerful. From my understanding, you were also the director of the Diné College Uranium Education Program. Can you tell us about your work with the UEP?
The Uranium Education Program was in existence in the late 1990s, and by 2003 or 4, it got assimilated into the Diné Environmental Institute when we established this institute. But through the Uranium Education Program, we work closely with K-12 and the faculty members, training them in a lot of the impacts that occurred on the Navajo Reservation, looking at and training them on what radioactivity is, doing a lot of hands-on work, a very intensive teachers' seminars in the course of 2 weeks, and making sure that what they learned was incorporated into their course syllabus. And we went out there in the semesters to make sure that the uranium component was integrated. The other thing we did was we did a series of studies and research geared towards uranium and its impact on the Navajo Reservation. We did quite a bit of clinical work with the uranium miners and millers, and as they fought to include specific groups into the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. So in that, we had a lot of input in the earliest development of the Compensation Act. We also got them prepared to address these impacts in the House and the Senate subcommittee hearings as they attempted to revise certain legislations that were out there for compensation. We were also involved in many other things, studies on contaminated homes and other contaminated structures. We look at the sheer number of unregulated water sources comprising of windmills, artesian wells, hand duct springs, hand pumps, and documenting a lot of those that were being used for the mixed purposes, and testing those, sampling and testing these for their radiochemistry and bacterial content. That was a huge undertaking. My job was to do this within the northern part of the Navajo Reservation. So that covered close to 2,000 square miles.
Wow.
There were other things that we did. Education was a huge component to get the Navajo communities and schools knowledgeable about what uranium is, what the element is, why the pros and cons of this element, and why the impacts. So a lot of human exposure had to be explained. We also started developing glossaries related to the analytical process, the elements, and even nuclear terminologies in the absence of Navajo glossaries or terminologies that you and I can talk about. How can you relate that concept back to our Navajo people?
Yeah.
So that was a tremendous undertaking.
Wow, that's incredible. So what are some of the fruits of your labor that you've been able to realize?
As an employee here, the college has been very supportive to my endeavors. I was a member of the National Academy of Sciences as we look at the mass array of management practices, transportation, disposal, long-term maintenance and surveillance of low-level ionizing radiation. That was, I think, one of the highlights in my career here at the NAE. We also assisted in developing moratoriums for uranium mining and processing site. The most critical one is the 2010 moratorium on uranium on the Navajo Reservation, uranium mining and milling.
Wow.
I also work with a close friend of mine, the Emeritus Chief Justice of the Navajo Nation, Robert Yazzie, in developing the Dene Remediation Commission that dealt with uranium issues and its master plan. In there, we incorporated a lot of the traditional concepts and values based on traditional ecological knowledge. TEK, as we call it, is noticeably absent during a lot of Western risk assessment strategies. So that's a critical component within Native American communities. Those were critical things that we did. And the after pursuing this for the past 30 years or so, the government risk assessors are finally being advised that if a tribe has these in place, the Navajo Nation does, through its fundamental law, that the Navajo fundamental law contained within Title I of our codes, there's a lot of esoteric knowledge that contains TEK in there.
Yeah.
They are advised to work accordingly in developing sound remedials and cleanup strategies, toxins like uranium.
That's incredible. I had never heard about TEK before, and I'm sure that there's a lot to be offered in those practices to the strategies that they're trying to undertake.
Yes, a lot of these concepts have not been accepted, but for the first time, I think US EPA was one of the first ones to start looking at that in terms of addressing uranium. DOE is not too far behind. It was through our efforts that they started employing Navajo scientists and Navajo technical people who have this type of knowledge in their background. So that deals a lot with working with our traditional practitioners. They are experts in their own rights in terms of our ties to the environment and why it's so critical to remain that critical balance between human and the environment. The Navajos refer to that as walking in beauty, hajona sha. So that's a very critical component. So it kind of goes into the realms of how risk assessment was often done, where you look at a population density factor, say one person and a population of 100,000, what are the chances of a known toxin causing cancer in that one person? You can't apply that principle in population risk density. I've seen it happen in EIS and environmental assessments where the outcome is the determination of negligible, very minimal risk or no impact.
Right.
But when you apply TEK, the ties of Native Americans to their environment, to the land, water, sun, plants, and animals, and you take away that particular component, a lot of environmental toxins can meet and exceed the threshold limits of and be classified as hazardous material. We have here in Shiprock over 270,000 cubic yards of radioactive material that is a result of the milling process during the Atomic Energy Commission era. Now, if TEK was applied on it, that site would have been a Superfund site, but it still remains to this day along the banks of the San Juan River, and we are still contending with the aftermath of its contamination into our groundwater. So that's a critical component that we have been diligently fighting for.
Well, I want to commend you on your resilience in that pursuit.
Thank you.
And I know that there's a long way to go, but I
right.
think it's important to recognize the successes. And I want to ask you now about what you're planning to share with us at the Decolonizing Nature Conference.
The concert, Water is Life, To'e'ina. That's basically what it means, to water, e'ina, is life. Water is Life. I want to bring, number one, a bit of the TEK, the traditional ecological knowledge, and how it applies to a lot of assessment strategies that we're going into. Our water wells, how we look at water, our connection to that critical component, and then how these contaminants are found in certain areas that are affected by uranium. And we have also the gold key mine spill that occurred. There's a heavy impact on it. What is the aftermath of that, and what are some of the psychosocial impacts that we have to continue with for decades after this incident? How can we remedy this situation in partnership and integrating both TEK and Western science? Those are things I think is very critical from a Native American perspective. It can no longer be ignored, the combining of these two technology. So that's what I want to bring to the table. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of Native students that are interested in this, especially students that are interested in being environmentalists, environmental scientists, and what have you within the STEM field.
I'm with the School of Public Administration at the University of New Mexico, and this is also something that interests me from that perspective. I think that educating and creating succession for this leadership effort to protect our environment is vital, but I do think that it is something that everyone should be concerned about and should be interested in learning more about.
That is so true. Now, the other component of the NEI Environmental Institute is the last component, the outreach.
Yeah.
That is very critical. No longer can we as research scientists go into a community on the pretense that we know it all and we can solve their problems. So any research or any researcher and their projects are well advised to communicate from the earliest onset, to communicate with the affected community and engage them in a community participatory approach. It's more critical in Native American communities like the Navajo. I am often sought for my traditional knowledge by scientists from the outside, so I can work with them accordingly, so that these critical balance, the values, the traditional setting is not offset by a well-meaning team of scientists who would go into a community and make that critical misconnect and miscommunication. The community participatory approach is required by our internal Human Health Research and Review Board of the Navajo Nation. It's commonly referred to also as an IRB. So that is a critical component. So that's where my role is. And I think scientists from the outside are, you know, they have to understand this. So, and then going back into the community, during our off-season, usually that's during the fall and the winter, to respond back to the affected community, the results of our project, our findings. I even require my summer interns to develop their own hypothesis in each project as to their area of interest, be it a specific element or any other component, and test their hypothesis and prove or disprove themselves, but to relay the results of their mentorship and their studies, their sampling strategy for the entire summer back to the affected community. So that is a critical component that I integrate into my internship.
True environmental justice is only accomplished through community participation.
Exactly.
I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to speak with me, and I really look forward to hearing what you have to say at the Decolonizing Nature Conference.
And we will see you then. Thank you very much.
Perry H. Charlie will be speaking at the Decolonizing Nature Conference, a gathering of 33 speakers from the fields of art, architecture, humanities, religion, science, and grassroots activists convening in Albuquerque, April 19th through Earth Day, April 22nd, to foster discussions on integration of knowledge across disciplines, practices across cultures, and social environmental movements across geographies. More info at decolonizingnature.unm.edu.